Okay, Ray.
Yes.
Lovely to see you here.
Hello.
Thanks for coming along.
Pleasure.
Limb Care.
Yes.
Let's go back to the very, very beginning. It's obviously a very powerful charity, all about supporting people who are amputees.
Yes, it is. But of course, it didn't start through a thought. It was started because I became a quad amputee. But I would like to take you back to my younger days, where I was born a healthy young man with arms and legs. And of course, my father had a building company. So I was destined to become part of his team, really. So a young age, at three, I remember sitting in the lorry with my dad and going out with him sometimes. And at five, I was helping him in the garden. So always digging holes or doing something. So practically, I was there. I mean, theory, I was useless at school. I mean, if there was anything practical to do, I did it. But school, I was no good at all. So I was moulded into his life, really.
So you're an actor.
I loved every minute of it, yes, very much. And I learnt the trade from a young age. I learnt to drive diggers, lorries and everything at 10, 11. And he had a yard in the area we lived and his own offices. So, yeah, I was brought up that way. I loved it. I loved my dad and loved my mum. It was a great family atmosphere. I didn't realise, if I looked in a crystal ball then, what would happen to the future. And thank God I didn't. At the age of 16, I left school with one O-level woodwork. And so I did very well. And But Dad took me on as a labourer, and because I had to work through the ranks, which is rightly so.
That's right to do.
And he sent me off to Twickenham College to get a builder's management course there, and also to learn surveying. And I did very well, but I went through the ranks as a foreman, and eventually at 21 I became a director of the company, and I was able to do everything. I learnt bricklaying, you name it. Then it was great fun in my life, enjoyed it, had fast cars and lots of girlfriends. Had a great time, really.
And then which order?
Yes, and then at 24 I met my my future wife then. We got married at the age, I was 25, got married, got a nice house in Egham near the yard. Looked rosy, really, everything. Had a young brother who was still at college, so he was 8 years younger. So, yeah, 25, 26 went on. And unfortunately, at 27, when I was working on a site, I felt very poorly. Found I had a lump in my neck, and unfortunately, I found out I had cancer, which was Hodgkin's disease.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so in those days, they took out your spleen and give you a biopsy, but it's a spleen biopsy, then chemotherapy and radiotherapy. I didn't know much about it, but it was the cancer, the big C word. And of course, I just took it on board saying, well, I'll get better. And they said, well, the diagnostic situation is that we could get you better. We have got the medication now, but it's early days for Hodgkin's disease.
And it's kind of a young man's illness, isn't it?
It seems to be, and I didn't know anything about it. But of course, it was my family, my wife and my family were more concerned than me. But cause when you've got something, you just think, right, let's take it on board and let's try and fight it. Chemotherapy was hell. Every week coming home, I was sick as a dog. I hated every minute. Metal taste in my mouth. And yeah, that became for 6 months horrible. And then I had 6 months of radiotherapy. After that year of hell, I still managed to work in the few days a week at the office and on the ground. But I was cleared, and they said, well, we'll come back in 6 month checkups. Looking back, I've cleared of that, thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
But having the spleen taken out, the doctor and the consultant always said, be careful because your immunity system is low. And so they compensate that with two penicillin a day. Well, it wouldn't help the spleen, but it does, I suppose, there as a backup antibiotic. 27, so that was it. And my family were saying, oh, were you better? I said I was, but my wife wanted a child. And unfortunately, the bullets weren't firing because I've had cancer.
Of course, yeah. Did you not do anything prior,
well, we
prior
went
to
a
that?
Clinic and took some samples, to save which was so embarrassing.
Really. That's a podcast for another time.
Indeed, yes, yes. It's like a blue movie, really. And, you know, you think to yourself, oh, my God, what more do you have to go through? And, yes, it was in the whatever it was, in a freezer.
So you saved some for the future.
Indeed. My brother was breeding like rabbits, really, and that upset my wife very much, actually. And my dad got to the stage where he was saying a bit upsetting words, and my mum saying, you could have this and that and try that. It's my own life. I'm trying my best. my mind was so upset that I left my dad's company and formed my own charity, my own company.
Mm-hmm.
And my company was Ray Edwards Limited. And the knowledge I learnt, and with the pressure I was under, I just put everything into the business. And I worked so hard.
Mm-hmm. But and remember, you were 28 at the time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we bought another house in Englefield Green. And yeah, I was doing very well. Then suddenly in, let me think, in 1986, with the help of in vitro fertilization, after three attempts, she became pregnant with twins. This was donor plus my situation, my stuff. And it helped. And of course, she gave birth on June the 4th to Michael and Diana, little boy and little girl. So I was elated. But I was working 24/7 because now I've got twins to feed as well as everything else.
As well as a business to run. Mm.
And I got very low in myself. And on March, Friday the 13th in 1987, I felt very poorly. And it was late March. It was actually, sorry,
mid-March.
Early March, late February, when my dad's birthday was 1st of March. They were coming round for Sunday dinner. I was working the Saturday, got home. Saturday night, I couldn't move. And Sunday morning, I was just like a body in the bed, sweating and everything. Mm. My dad came in because they were visiting for his birthday. He just took one look at me and I couldn't walk. He took me down, picked me up really, put me in the car and took me to Princess Margaret's Windsor. Mm. And from then on, I didn't know what was happening. I was on dialysis and I don't know anything else until, I know March the Friday the 13th, I had to amputate my arms and legs because I got gangrene. So I must have cut my hand, poison got into the body. The body was saying, well, my spleen is not here, so your heart pushes all your poison to the extremities. The extremities were catching gangrene very quickly, and March 5, the 13th, they took my arms and legs off to save my life, but I didn't know anything until probably 3 weeks later.
So you were kept asleep?
Yes.
That's really traumatic. So you'd cut yourself and hadn't realised and got gangrene because of it?
Yeah.
Which ended up with you becoming a quad...
We were talking earlier about your mindset. What's it like? I can only think of a war zone, and all I wanted to do is die. I did not want to live, because as a practical fellow at 32, a dad, how can I touch?
A new father, a practical man. Where do you go and what do you do? Not only the physical limitations suddenly, you had to be tortuous for your mind.
Don't really know how to explain it, but you're not really clued up for this in your life, you know. And I cried. Even now, it's so emotional. It's so emotional. And I remember in Hammersmith Hospital, it was very warm in those in the ward, but it was snowing outside, and there was cockroaches in the ward, and it was a shithole. It was horrible,
mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what to do. And people were coming in saying, "How are we today?" Well, I soon told them to go away.
Angry.
And I was angry, and the more I got angry, they had to up the antibiotics or the Omnipom, or like, I don't know what it was, like Domestos, they put it in me. They were trying to kill everything, and I was so ill. And I was looking at my hands and my feet, and I didn't really know too much about my feet because I thought my arms were bad. And I can remember partly they were like wood, and that was it. But my legs, I didn't know, and my dad told me 3 weeks later they'd amputate the legs as well. And for your dad to tell you.
So your father told you all that, not the hospital?
Well, he was just sitting in my bed all the time, you know. Of course, the kidneys were failed as well, so I was a teddy bear on dialysis.
So do you think that you're lucky to be here?
I believe I am. But March Friday the 13th probably was a lucky day, you know. But even now, 35 years on, it's more emotional now than ever because I can relive every minute of that day.
Mm.
And I didn't know what the future would hold. Because, as I say, I only knew about Douglas Bader film Reach for the Sky and Nelson standing on his column.
So you'd never really met anybody?
No.
And there wasn't anybody like your charity that you've started? Was
there? Help? No.
Was there nobody around to talk to you?
No. So, you know, and I thought, thank God I didn't look in a crystal ball because I would have thrown that out the window.
Yeah.
But all I wanted to do is cuddle my children. But when they visited, they wanted to take all my drips out and I couldn't cuddle them. So I was just... I just lost my plot. And I looked at my wife, who was very beautiful, and I thought she doesn't love me, but maybe I was putting a barrier around me, and that was my wrong thing to do. So I built the wall to protect me and not let anyone in.
Well, I think that's
kind of, and I threw everyone away.
it's going to be quite natural to do that, isn't it? Because you've got to try and rebirth yourself. You've got to find yourself again.
Yeah, but I suppose I precipitated a divorce and hell to become what I was going to be.
Did you?
Mm.
So
I regret that.
Do you?
Big time. Big time.
But you can only say that with the benefit of hindsight, can't you? You know, you're going through this massive trauma because everybody up to that point, you thought you grew up, you got a job, you're passionate about what you did, you've had a beautiful wife, you've got now your children, and you have your arms and your legs. You know, that's kind of it. That in your brain, although you know other people struggle with this kind of thing.
Well, it's utopia, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And suddenly you're having to reevaluate everything in your life.
And I think I didn't like myself, so I thought everyone else wouldn't like me. And that's how I visualised everything, you know. And then I kept, I get it better every day, you know. And the poison was going. And they kept saying, I hear talking about what hospital they were sending me to for rehabilitation. And I'd heard of Roehampton because it's a famous hospital.
Mm.
And that's what I thought. And eventually, late April, I was able to be transported. And my wife took me. We had a BMW, brand new BMW 7 Series, and I thought I'd never drive again. I cried. And getting very emotional, actually.
Is everything in your life you have to learn to do again?
The trouble is when things are taken away from you and you can't have it back, that's hard, you know. And she took me to the Douglas Bader unit, and it was a lovely day, actually, in April, and late April. And they got a wheelchair and they pushed me in, and I just see to left and right, arms missing and legs missing. And I looked for a quad amputee, I couldn't find one, and they put me in solitary. And
that's interesting you said that to start with, put you in solitary.
Yeah, it was a room on my own. And I sat on the bed, and Janet had to go because of the twins, so I was left. And I tell you what, a guy in a white coat, with loads of white coats, walked in, and they started all talking. And I can't be rude to what I said, but I told him to go away. I just said, off.
Words we don't use.
And I'm not really like that, but there was a time where I thought, this is not right. And then again, they came in and talked about me. I told them again to go
away.
And it was a Mr. Williams, who was a really lovely character in the end. He came in and he sat by the bed and he said, may I call you Ray? I said, yes, please. He said, I know what it's upset you. I said, what has upset me? He said, well, you are traumatic. Now, no one has ever gone through this. We have never had a quad amputee like this. I said, well, it's not that really. You're talking about me, not to me. And, you know, quite honestly, I'm frightened. I don't know what's going on. My wife's just left me to see the twins, and I got no one. And I said, no, you put me in a room on my own. I said, what am I? Just don't you want me? Am I nothing?
A spectacle.
I said, this is not on. I said, this is horrible. He said, well, look, what's the problem? Oh, well, the problem is I've got no arms and legs. And I swore. Actually, all the swearing I did was very good because it helped me very much. But I wasn't trying to be rude to him. I was just so angry. He eventually said, right, within an hour, you will have a powered wheelchair, and we'll make you something to go on your stump, this one, to move the little remote control lever on it, and at least we can transfer you. And I said, yes, sir. And secondly, I said, do you not want people to see me? Am I so ugly? He said, no, I'll try and transfer you to a room with two of you. So he did that day. And I suppose once I was in the wheelchair, and I know it sounds really petty, I was quite pleased, actually. I was able to move.
Well, you had a bit of independence back. Yeah,
and you
weren't in a room on your own. You were with somebody else, which means that you were out in the world.
And, you know, from that day on, it was kind of like a learning curve. To limbs were fitted and arms were fitted. And you just go through the process of how dexterity can become one again, because you have to use a carbon fibre gripper to learn to do things. And that's not easy. And there's no way domestic duties are easy now, even today. And so going to the toilet was quite difficult. It can be very painful, as one can imagine.
With your gripper.
Indeed. Indeed.
What do you think's helped you throughout the whole of this?
my sense of humour.
I was going to say, that kind of shines like a beacon.
My sense of humour. And yes, I do take the mickey out myself to help others. And the joy of, I love challenges. And I wouldn't say it's been a joyous challenge, but I fought every battle, cancer and this one. And I wanted to fight to walk out of hospital to see my twins, which I was able to do on June the 4th. But as we all say as amputees, that rehabilitation place is cotton wool. You're patted on the back, you're cuddled, and if you need something, you get it, and they help you. Now the wide world is coming back to me, and I'm not used to being not able to do things in the new in the world I was in. So you get driven to home, where I used to drive home to my drive, because the last time I saw it, I left.
Yeah, you could drive.
And a ramp has been built, a crap ramp by the local authority. I thought, that's terrible. Then you go in, and then suddenly you see the bed brought downstairs. I thought, well, why can't I sleep with my wife? That, I lost the plot. Completely lost the plot. I was aggressive. And eventually, I tried to calm down, but over the weeks I was there, I felt my wife didn't love me anymore. Maybe I pushed her away, but she did say, I don't think I can handle this. I can't live with someone who's disabled. Right. Okay. So I eventually ended up going to the pub, sitting there all day and being driven back, and I hit the booze.
Coping strategy.
I lost it. Completely lost it. And then I was able to drive again, so I went to an assessment centre in Banstead and I learnt to drive. And believe it or not, my business had become very big and busy, and I won a big contract, and I was able to buy a new Jaguar. So, because I love Jaguars, so I bought a 3.4 Jaguar in Weybridge, and I was proud-ish. But I'd really lost me, and drinking a lot, still driving. And then one night, I said to my wife, you don't love me anymore, do you? I said, I can't cuddle the children, I'm useless. So it was one night where I had a load of pills, drunk a lot, and there was a big oak tree on this little road in Ingford Green. I just come out the pub and went for it, and I crashed it into the tree. Now, I was so drunk, that, and I didn't put a seatbelt on, I fell out the car. And the car was a bit of a mess, but the tree was just standing there going, well.
You try and get one out on me.
The stars were so bright, and there was one big star, and I thought, yeah, that's that guardian angel that helped me. Limb care and, you know, life really. And yeah, so I got back home and eventually we divorced. And
did you have to go to hospital?
No.
So there was no extra damage or anything?
Pride.
But
I sought help sometime later, but it wasn't because I needed to have help. But in hospital, you get some kind of do-gooders. They always have these sort of sandals, and they used to say, how are we today?
Sandals.
Well, they are social worker sandals, and come in and say, hello, I'm so-and-so. How are you? Oh, go away, please. And, you know, and you tend to think, why talk to me like that condescending voice?
It'd just be normal.
I would love that, but they never happened to me, and... Yeah, so, you know, the fight was tough, and I ended up, the divorce, we had a lovely house, and I ended up eventually in a one-bedroom flat in Addlesden, where I was very low. And, of course, what do? I've lost the business and everything. And I was a member of the Limbless Association that I'd never was powerful enough to become a trustee then, but they did eventually ask me to become a trustee, so I thought maybe my future is to help others through the trauma I've been through. And I became a trustee then, and over the years I sort of helped them, and eventually in I think it was 1991 I was at a retirement do at Ingerfield Green, and it was a bank manager's. My dad took me, and I met Fiona, who is now my wife, and 12 years younger, blonde, beautiful. And we have two children naturally, so I have four children. But prior to meeting Fiona and going through the divorce, I met with another lady, and we had another child. So I've got 5 children.
Do you know what? That's completely fascinating, isn't it? We're sitting listening to everything you've been saying up to that point, and you just lying in that bed, everything was helpless, and you felt helpless and hopeless. And now how your world is. Mm. And that's the resilience. That's down to you, resilience, maybe fate, maybe your guardian angel. There's a reason you're here. There's a reason this has happened.
Yeah, and I've lived a bit of a life, actually, you know, and I've seen and met beautiful people.
So earlier on, before we started, you were talking about Kilimanjaro, and this was before you started limb care.
Yeah, yeah. That. You see, the trouble with me is I take on challenges, and I don't think. I just go on and say, yeah, I'll do that. And Kilimanjaro was a bit of an effort because...
A bit of an effort.
Yeah, because, I mean... You know, as I say, I've lost the arms and legs, I've had cancer, and then I had a heart attack in 2005. Then I had stents put in. Then in 2000 and odd later, I had another heart attack. So the 2010 episode was when I decided to climb Kilimanjaro for this charity. And the trustees weren't enamoured with me. In fact, they said no. But we arranged it with Charity Challenge, and we got 24 people. 4 of us were amputees. I was, of course, the Metal Mickey with everything gone, and we challenged ourselves in October 2010 to raise funds for, you know, the limb loss community, and we raised £86,000. Wow. Again, my life was still challenged because the trustees did not like me to a point where they made me redundant when I was 3/4 of the way up the mountain.
That's decent of them.
Oh, very nice. And I could have thrown the toys out of the pram, and I said a few words. And wasn't happy.
Seems like you've got colourful language in certain situations.
It does describe how the moment was, though, I must say. But, you know, we were going up and up. And believe me, if anyone says they want to climb Kilimanjaro, say no.
Okay, thanks for the advice.
You know, the old porters were saying poli poli. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done. I know I've lost my arms and legs, but even people who are able-bodied were terribly finding it hard. And the altitude sickness was terrible. And the higher you go, it's going, that's heavy breathing, which is rather nice sometimes.
Was that what that was?
Yes.
Not in the right situation.
Indeed. And, you know, in the end, I had the lungs were playing up and the kidneys and that because I had no spleen. They said, oh, Raimondo. They called me Raimondo the Lion, and they said, you just are mad. Eventually, a day before the summit, they came into my tent and they looked at me and said, you're not well. I said, okay. I said, but I want to go up to the top because I want to prove a point to myself and to help people. They said, you've done enough. You've done enough. I said, no, I'm doing it. Okay, hold on. And the chief guide and the health GP came in and he said, this is a bag. I said, oh, that's nice. He said, no, that's a body bag. And this is what we will take you down in.
They were telling you that you are not going any further.
Indeed. So they rescued me, and the rescue was quite funny. It was kind of 10 porters on an old bed that basically was a Second World War, and it was just terrible. I mean, I wouldn't even want to describe that. Got down to the clinic, nearly died, and yeah, so I just, it's ironic how I'm here.
But during that journey, you decided you had a visitation.
Do you know, I've always believed in fate. When I had the cancer, I had a visit. When I was in hospital and losing my arms and legs, I had a visit. And the same person, I think it's a centurion, some kind of smart guy, who pats me on the back. And he looks smart, but he's always cold. It's cold around me. But a sense of comradeship and cuddles and okay warmth as well inside me. And limb care came into my mind. And I thought... limb care. I thought, what's that for? Anyway, I didn't realise. I eventually got better and flew back, and I thought, well, I think we better do something here. So I formed limb care. And of course, it certainly upset the situation with the other trustees. But I said, well, you're making me redundant. I have no
choice. You know, allegiance, have you, to them?
No.
So just explain in bullet points what limb care is and what you want for it.
Well, to know my story, which you've heard, and I never had any help from other amputee to guide me. So I've learnt the hard way. So my knowledge and empathy could help other amputees. So the Journey of Limb Care is a charity that guides, supports and gives them a helping hand and a step forward in the right direction to say it doesn't matter if you've lost a limb, we can pick up the pieces, put them together and hopefully create a better quality of life for you.
And I think that because you've been through that experience, like we were saying earlier, it doesn't matter what you talk about, it resonates with whoever the other person is. So they're not, they might feel desperate and hopeless and helpless, but they know it'll be okay.
Well, I do hope so.
And you keep talking to them until they believe it is.
Yeah, and you know, not to be so empathetic, or more empathetic than sympathetic, because no one wants, oh, dearie me, for God's sake, because I didn't want that. But if I had a helping hand and someone say, come on, Ray, let's get it sorted out, be all right.
Yeah, and talk to you, not over you.
Totally agree. And you know, we're not condescending. We have a great team. As I say, I am honoured to have the best team I've had. And I've had a few people work alongside me in Limcare. But I truly believe now we're on the new world. This is a new image, Limcare, and I'm so honoured.
And just to your sitting to your right, we have Jim.
Hello.
Recently joined.
Yeah, about two years ago that I started working with Limcare.
And how did you meet Ray?
I met Ray in Roehampton when I was in my rehab after losing my leg. And we got talking about Limcare, so I came and had a look at the office. And
before you go to that point, Ray rocks up in your life. What did you think?
Well, it's an inspiration, isn't it? I mean,
forced to be reckoned with.
You can't moan. I mean, I've only lost one leg, and I'm below knee, which is classed as a scratch compared to above knee amputees out there. So yeah,
is that really? Is it kind of a?
Yeah, that's a thing. Yeah,
is anybody
below
thing?
That's just a scratch. It's always easier with your knee to walk when you're an amputee, and then you can use your own knee instead of the three knees.
All right, so you're just a bit of a lightweight.
Yeah, exactly. I just literally keeping up with the fashion statement, really. Yeah, with my little scratch.
So there must have been a time, joking aside, you're lying in the hospital thinking, what the hell has happened to me? And obviously I don't use those words.
Yeah, of course. Well, similar to Ray, I had a young family at the time as well. My boy was about 8 months old when I first got ill. And I went down a dark path thinking that, you know, you can't really play football with your kids anymore, you can't take them down the park.
What's the point in it all?
Exactly. I mean, in rehab you're not allowed to wear a leg at all, because obviously you get taken to rehab literally a week after you've lost your limb.
Gosh.
And you're still stitched up, so you're not allowed to stand, just in case you fall, because you can.
Maybe some of it is about accepting the fact you have lost a limb as also, because you can see it.
Yes.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, that takes a while to sink in. And plus, you do forget.
Do you?
Well, yeah, you could be laying in bed and knowing you wake up during the night.
For a wee.
Sometimes you forget. And you just get up and take a step as you normally would. And obviously the next thing you're on the floor. Because
So when those kind of moments happen, do you go, bad language, or do you think, done it again, have a laugh?
Yeah, the first couple of times I think the bad language comes out, but after like the third, fourth time, you get used to it.
Okay, you two found each other.
Yeah, we found each other, and Ray obviously helped me while I was in Limcare, and I was speaking to some of the staff from Limcare. And then I came into the office and I noticed the prickles.
Oh, yes.
And I fell in love with them.
I think you need to explain who the prickles and what the prickles are.
So the prickles is our youth, Limcare youth, where these five hedgehog characters, limb impaired and amputees, they all work together to help the town of Prickleton.
Okay.
Which we are trying to get turned into a book at the moment.
So just pause there just for a moment. So you also support youth, you know, younger ones who've had amputations.
Yeah, anybody, but you don't have to be an amputee for our youth group. If a child lives with an amputee, like my son and Ray's children, what we would do is, they generally do a little bit more around the house, their mums and dads, because we don't wear our limbs indoors all of the time, because they do hurt. And we do ask them to do a lot more things. Can you just grab me this?
Do you take advantage?
Yes, of course.
You've got to
take your chances sometimes.
Yeah. I'm really sorry. But I can't do that, son.
Yeah.
Even though you could.
I've left my phone upstairs. Can you just run and grab it?
So you've heard that here.
Yeah, exactly. So what we want to do is we want to just say thank you to all of the children. Okay. And just send them out for a day out at Thorpe Park or Chesington, just to say thank you.
Sounds so simple, doesn't it? But it's all about fundraising. You know, straight into there, into the fundraising element. It's always going to be about that, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, we do okay. We obviously need as much as we can coming in just to cover the costs of the holidays. And, of course, it's hard to try and get out there because there's lots of charities out there and we're all chasing the same pound but we just need,
and people will donate if it resonates with them.
Exactly.
And they can't donate if they've got no awareness about it anyway.
I mean, that is one of the biggest things being an amputee, is it's not that talked about out there. We're more of the show when we walk past people. You know, the staring and everything like that.
It's quite difficult. I think probably a lot of people find it difficult to deal with because it's a very in-your-face kind of thing. So they don't know how to deal with it, I suspect. So building awareness is everything.
Yeah, it's absolutely everything.
Normalising it in a obscure
in the way
kind
that
of way.
You can. Mm. Yeah, you do try and hide away sometimes. Yeah, get a leg cover or something that gives you the full shape of your leg. So then you can wear a pair of trousers, because obviously I've got a bar. Mm. So if it's a bit windy outside, I sound like a flagpole walking along. So anything we can do.
With you two, it does seem that your sense of humour and resilience is two words that I'll take away from our interview and our chat today. There's so much more that we can talk about. I'd love it if you could come back and talk some more about prickles.
You've written
a book as well.
Yes.
And then there's so many other fundraising things to do, talk about, an MBE for the charity and you, Ray.
Thank you.
I mean, it's awesome. We're kind of running out of time now, so I would love to talk to you again on all of those things next time.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
can I just say it's been an honour to talk to you, you know, and sometimes when you do a story on the radio, wherever, it's very emotional, and today was the most emotional one I've ever done.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm honoured to have been part of that, for sure.
Thank you.
So where can people find you? What's the website if they need to get in touch?
Well, the website is www.limcare.org or email info@limcare.org. It's very interesting, and whatever we can do for you, we'll try.
That's wonderful. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much. Take care.